The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Man, a beautiful day today. Not terribly high humidity. Temperature is just in the upper 70s to maybe nearing the mid 80s, but it's been a gorgeous day. So hope everybody doing well. It's Bill and Dan here in the studio today. Drew getting the day up. Drew's got a lot going on over on campus as well.
Back from my adventure at Truist Field.
Yeah, you went over the Dodgers welcomed you last night.
Oh, it's good to see what. Good to see my boys again.
The last 10 innings, things were going really well for the Braves through the first 26 innings of the series, of the 36 innings. But the Dodgers with 7 in the ninth on Sunday and then blanking the Braves 9-0 yesterday.
Yeah, and it did not feel overpowering from Yamamoto. I mean, he was he nibbles, a lot. I mean, I think 40 pitches in, half of his pitches had been outside the strike zone. So it's like, he's a guy who is he's got super impressive stuff, but probably needs to throw more strikes as the postseason approaches. But between Yamamoto and Phillips, who ends up getting the win, and some of the efforts from the Dodgers relievers, yeah, they really kept Atlanta's offense off kilter. And then that top of the lineup, Bill, with Ohtani, Mookie Betts, and Freddie Freeman.
Yeah, it's hard to top that top of the lineup.
And Will Smith and Max Muncy providing a little bit of pop behind those guys as well. And Teoscar Hernandez, who's been very good. Like that's a good first six that a National League team is going to have to contend with. The Braves organist was really doing good work last night, Bill. So he did among my favorites of the Dodger walk-ups. He did Brass Monkey by the Beastie Boys for Max Muncy. He did See Is for Cookie from Sesame Street. He did that one for Mookie Betts. He did the theme song to The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air for Will Smith as Will Smith's walk up.
Their organist is
yeah, he was great. He was excellent. They did the Gambler for Mookie Betts as well. A little joke there with Betts. I thought it was Truist is it's an outstanding ballpark, and it's got to be. I sit as someone who's not a fan of the I'm rooting for another team other than the Braves, but the it's got to be a frustrating season for the Braves, but those fans are still showing up and they're still cheering them on. Love to see them get some playoff baseball in Atlanta. Although it's going to be,
it's going to be tough. They're a game back of the Mets now. They've got the Reds for three. And then they either play the Mets right after that or the series after.
A good team is going to stay home in the National League. I mean, when the National League playoffs are set, either.
Well, I think the Diamondbacks are just like a game or just not, yeah, very barely ahead of the Mets for that second spot. No. So, I mean, they could drop out.
No, between the two West teams in the wild card race, and I think the Padres could still, the Padres can make a stand for the division title with another series coming up although the Dodgers, they got a lot of Rockies and Marlins on the schedule between now and the end of the season, Bill.
Good.
And that's trouble. I think that's trouble for anybody else who wants to win the National League West, is that you look and the two teams you don't want to see on the schedule for somebody that you're in contention with right now for a playoff spot in the National League are probably the Florida Marlins. The Miami Marlins, Colorado Rockies are probably those two teams. And Rockies have been a little bit hotter of late, but still probably going to lose 100-plus by the end of the season. And so, I would still think the Dodgers have the inside track for the National League, the National League West title. But they're still
battling for the best overall record with the Phillies.
But the Padres or the Diamondbacks could make a run there. But between the Padres, the Diamondbacks, the Mets, and the Braves, someone is going to get left out in the National League playoffs. And that's a shame because those are four really good teams that have had up and down seasons. I think any of those four could make noise. Any of those four could get hot enough to win at least one playoff series, you would think. and then and maybe make another. I mean, it's in this wide open.
It's probably going to be all about pitching, and that's something that's been a problem for both the Braves and Dodgers.
Yeah, and,
I mean,
and that's
just keeping guys healthy.
Who, do you have a? I mean, do you think it's Philly's year in the National League?
Would you say? I don't know. I mean, they've been bouncing a little bit. I mean, here lately, it's been inconsistent for them.
What do you think of San Diego?
The Pods are. Yeah, they're sneaky good.
I know. I think that's your kind of team, and that's a team that I think in the National League, talent tends to win, and there's a lot of it on that San Diego team when they get healthy and a lot of really good pitching. So I want to see how they close. But no, I had a great time last night, and I would encourage folks to check out some Braves baseball or go to because we got listeners everywhere.
Yeah, because you can't watch it on.
Well,
most people can't.
But you know what? Go check out a Major League Baseball game at a park near you before the season ends, if you can. I was talking with bumped into Jordan Hill, who was at the game night, and sat with him for most of it. And he was talking about some of the ballparks he's been to, and you know, even the ones like people will pan Tropicana Field as an experience, but like if you don't go to Major League Baseball all the time. You go to Tropicana Field, you'll have a great time. Like it's a really fun addition to a trip to the Tampa St. Pete area. So this would be an advertisement for just in general. Like if you get the chance, check out a major league game before the season ends because you probably have a pretty good time.
In the meantime, it's just about to be conference time in all across college football as Auburn ready to start SEC play against the Arkansas Razorbacks. This Saturday afternoon, and we're still looking back. We can still look back, get folks' thoughts. Haven't gotten your thought. I mean, we did a little bit yesterday. Get more thoughts on Hank Brown's first collegiate start. We had a chance to talk to Hank today. The media did. I sent that to you. We've got that audio. We can play some of it a little later on. We're going to talk with the voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, here in about 7 or 8 minutes. We'll have Andy on for a couple of segments.
And we get good stuff from the players, although I think even the players would tell you, once the season gets going, they want Saturday to speak for itself. You know what I mean? Like they'll provide
Hank, Hank's a pretty he's a pretty interesting young
man.
And this is
a really exciting time for Hank Brown, right? Like he got to do the Saturday postgame after being the victorious starting quarterback for Auburn, gets to go into a weekday media availability as the start, and not that, I mean, I think there are some student athletes we've encountered over the years that would dread those sorts of things. There are probably some that would relish those opportunities, and I think Hank Brown is, he's having a pretty good time.
He doesn't seem overwhelmed seem overwhelmed Saturday. And he's pretty laid back about it today. It's just, it is what it is. I've been preparing to be the starter, and now that I am, I'll keep preparing the same.
And it's worth pointing out that he was a starting quarterback for a decent amount of time as a high school quarterback, which is, I think something where he – and he learned from an NFL
– Dilfer.
Yeah, an NFL starter and a TV-savvy guy and current college football head coach. I speculated on the Observer podcast, Bill, and this is something I would have liked that had I been able to go today, the Hank Brown availability – I do wonder if there's communication between him and Trent Dilfer because
he was asked that.
He was asked that
and
today,
and he gave the kind of answer that would make you think, yes,
okay,
because Dilfer and UAB played Arkansas last week.
Well, I was going to say,
not just that, but I mean, he's got extra reason. He said they're in constant communication, and he's very close with Coach Dilfer. And he said, and so somebody said, so have you talked to him? He goes, we've talked.
Yeah, I mean, and I wondered on the Observer podcast in general, because Trent Dilfer played such a crucial role in Hank Brown's development as a quarterback, if they're still in contact in general. Like, since Hank Brown got the job, how much he's been in contact with Trent Dilfer, who understandably is also busy coaching a UAB team.
I was interested when Hank said that he's known Hugh Freeze longer than he's known Trent Dilfer, though, because he's been recruited by by Hugh Freeze longer.
But then trying to
recall the very first time they met.
To add the wrinkle that Trent Dilfer just played Arkansas.
Absolutely.
This weekend. Yeah, I mean, I think that just makes it all the way. I mean, it's incredible how small the world can be sometimes. Of all the people for Arkansas to have played the week before.
Auburn starting quarterback's high school coach.
Yeah, of all the people Arkansas could have faced, in the game before they play Hank Brown, they play the guy who played – You know, he's one of the most important people.
Yeah, one of the most important people in developing Hank Brown into a college quarterback.
Yeah, it's amazing how these, you know, novelistic sort of flourishes pop up on the college football
schedule.
Sort of
like another one of the folks, players we got to talk to today was Isaiah Rakes, who practiced against Bobby Petrino's offense every practice last year.
Well, you could play that of all the places, of all the, you know, like the Casablanca sort of deal. You could do that with Travis or Bobby, right? Like either one of those guys, you could say of all
the but they weren't at Auburn last year.
They weren't at Auburn last year, but you think about Bobby and it's like of all the people Hugh Freeze could be facing in a pivotal game for him as Auburn head coach, like a vitally important game. We talked about it a little bit yesterday, Bill. You know, this would be home loss number 6 for Hugh Freeze. Mm-hmm. If Arkansas comes in on Saturday and wins, and Billy Napier's under fire with 6 home losses in 2.5 seasons as the head coach of Florida.
Like this, Billy Napier took over a program that wasn't as barren as Auburn's.
Not trying to turn up the heat on Hugh Freeze or anything like that. Like if it were, and of all the people he could be facing in a game that pivotal, it's somebody who has the kind of history with Auburn that Bobby Petrino has. Like it's someone who has, you know, for 20 plus years been a lightning rod in the Auburn football universe.
And Auburn has his counterpart on the other side of the ball from last year, DJ Durkin.
Can I say even a guy like you knew pretty well, like at a, you know,
I mean,
a lifetime ago,
because his kids were my kids' ages.
Yeah, I mean, so it's like, I mean, for all the people, know, it's Bobby Petrino leading a team back to Auburn. And I mean, and this game is rich too, because you think about Auburn Arkansas last year, and
think about Auburn Arkansas year before last, though.
You think
last,
about Auburn Arkansas years, year before last.
The road team has come in and stomped the home team. Yeah. This is a game. You're talking about Hugh Freeze, and Andy just texted and said he's ready, so we'll get him in a sec. Sam Pittman is trying to get back to 500. He's 25-26. Hugh Freeze is trying to stay over 500. Hugh Freeze is 8-8. Sam Pittman's 25-26. I mean, both of these guys are, they need to be above, and if possible, well above 500.
As different as things are for both programs from when they met last year, do you still think that because of how well, you know, I wonder, as Peyton played pretty well in that game last year, but it was very, it seemed like it was pretty easy for Auburn in general because the way they started it, they were able to.
You know, Peyton's legs played a big factor in that game a year ago.
Yeah, I do.
And that's one of the things Sam Pittman talked about. I read his the text of his press conference, and he talked about how dangerous Peyton Thorne was because of his legs, and that's something they may not have to be as concerned with this year.
They may not have to be as concerned about it. You do wonder, you know, about the things Hank Brown brings to the table that
Sam raved about Hank Brown's ability to sling the ball. Said he can really sling it. All right. We're gonna we'll get to our first break, and then we're going to check in with the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham. So stick with us. We're just underway here on the Tuesday Drive.
I'm Wes Allen, Secretary of State. In Alabama, election integrity is a top priority. We must
get to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and welcome in the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham. Andy, how are you doing today?
Gentlemen, I'm doing well. I hope you're having a good day. Get ready for the SEC opener on Saturday.
Yes, enjoying the sunshine and looking forward to more of that throughout the week and the weekend.
Yeah, it was a rainy weekend. We haven't had a rain game like that in a while, so I'm looking forward to a little bit warmer temperatures on Saturday.
Yep,
and what should be a huge crowd on hand for Auburn and Arkansas. Looks like we're going to have sunshine and get ready for hopefully a great day of football at Jordan-Hare.
Andy, I wanted to allow the drive to chime in on this discussion that has just been captivating people.
Heated pregame discussion.
What do you think of this, Andy? Rule of thumb, there are exceptions, but rule of thumb, if you're using utensils, it's a dessert. And if you're eating it with your hands, it's probably a snack.
No, I don't agree with that.
I tossed out brownies.
I'd say brownies and ice cream sandwiches are your big exceptions because those feel like desserts that you're eating with your hands. But I'd say a lot of like two cookies versus a piece of cake. You know, one of those is a snack, one of those is a dessert. But I would say that's where I'm thinking if you're looking for a line to draw in the sand, I would think utensils could be.
That's a possibility. I think when it is eaten is
I think that is critical.
Line.
Absolutely critical.
And that this for us on the network, it started with Jason Campbell, who's perpetually on a diet, which he doesn't need to be, but he is. And so he came in prior to the Cal game. And we were having our customary lunch over at Neville Arena as a crew together. And then we walked from there to the east side of Jordan-Hare Stadium to our stage for the pregame. And he mentioned that he had sworn off dessert for a month. And then he admitted that he had had a cookie in the last month. And that sparked then the discussion that went to the pregame show and Jason with me on the Friday football luncheon, and it's become a thing. And I immediately disagreed with Jason that a cookie is a dessert. Now, there's a lot of people that are in Jason's corner that it is a snack. The rest of our crew came to the realization or the agreement that it depends on when a cookie is eaten. To me, a cookie is a dessert.
Well,
we came to the realization or the determination that it depends on when the cookie is eaten. If the cookie is eaten right after your meal, that's dessert.
Well, generally, a cookie at night is going to be a second. Mm. It's going to be a second. It's going to come after a dessert. That's why it's like a later night snack.
He's trying to get away from sugar for a month, calling it dessert. But a cookie typically has a generous amount of sugar because that's why it tastes so good. So it's become a thing. Now it sounds like you guys took it in a different direction with regard to utensils or not. And I contend it can still be a dessert whether you eat with utensils or not. That's my determination.
Unscientific.
Dessert in my mind is just something that immediately follows a meal. Breakfast. I mean, if it follows, you know, the midday or the evening meal, that's dessert.
Yeah, the utensil law is not hard and fast. I just want to say, that's something where an unscientific theory there. But no, I've been really enjoying the work this season. You and Jason, it's hard to believe this is something that just started. In the last couple of games, you know, and I really feel like he's gotten more comfortable, telling stories and reacting in the moment, I've really enjoyed the calls this year, Andy.
This type of question started, I guess, it was Gus Malzahn's last season at Auburn, and it started at Thanksgiving. When I contend that cranberry sauce, which I dearly love, regardless if it's homemade or right out of the can, cranberry sauce at Thanksgiving is a side. It is not, it is part of the meal. And Stan White was adamant that it is not.
So that
became quite a
right.
quite a thing, and it continued until Stan was done. At Auburn.
What does Stan consider cranberry sauce as? I mean, it's a
condiment.
I don't think he cares for it. One.
Oh well.
Okay.
If you don't care for it, then no. It doesn't matter. But I mean,
I think it's an integral part of a Thanksgiving or a Christmas meal. I have no idea.
It is.
I don't know if it's something that could be used in Hanukkah. I don't know. I'll ask.
But it goes
so
well
about
with
that.
Dressing.
But it just, I love cranberry sauce. And I love my mom's cranberry sauce, and Jan makes a great homemade cranberry sauce. And so it is an integral part of my holiday meal. I didn't get the idea from Stan that it was with him. And that's what...
Yeah, there are some people that just don't like it. If you don't like something, then you're not going to consider it as a staple, for sure.
Exactly.
And our time with Andy is up.
No, I'll tell you what, Andy. This past Saturday, it felt like it was Strawberry Fields Forever for Hank Brown. So, you know, I mean, watching him operate the offense and find himself...
He's a cool freshman, isn't he?
He has a... I talked to him today as we were getting ready and getting some work done for the Auburn Football Everyday Show. And one of the things that struck me about Hank is has nothing to do with the fact that he had a really good... He has a great, deep voice. And
he does.
Said, listen.
Yeah, he does.
I said, when your football's done, you need to take advantage of that voice because you've got some pretty good pipes there, young man.
You know,
I was impressed with how he handled the game last week. Mm-hmm. 17 of 25, 235 yards, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. I thought he did everything correctly from and Coach Freeze talked about this last night on Tiger Talk, that every one of his run checks were correct.
Yeah, 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yes, 100%. And he made a couple throws that he shouldn't have. The one across his body was the one that Coach Freeze talked about. But I thought he handled himself well, even in tough, weather conditions. And his second half was almost flawless.
Oh,
it
was two drops.
That's against a New Mexico defense that didn't have great numbers coming in. Can he do that against Arkansas this week? Because Arkansas is significantly better defensively. And it's an SEC game. And all of that goes in, how well will he react to it? I think he'll probably react to it pretty well. He seems to be pretty cool-headed. But when he's staring down, Landon Jackson coming off of one edge and Xavier Sorry at linebacker and, it's a different animal that Auburn faces this week in Arkansas defensively.
It's remarkable how small the world is. We were talking about it earlier, Andy, the thought that Arkansas comes in for this pivotal game with Auburn. Bobby Petrino and Travis Williams both have long histories with this university. Those are the two Arkansas coordinators. And yeah, you would think Travis Williams is looking at – I mean, Travis Williams is looking at it as this is a guy making his second career start, first career start – against an FBS opponent. I would think Travis Williams is going to try to rattle Hank's cage as much as he can.
I think any defensive coordinator will try to do that, but I understand what you're saying about Travis. I mean, he wants to have a big game against his alma mater in a place where he was a coach for quite some time. And there's a lot of interesting stories this week going in. Both of these teams are 2-1. Both of these teams lost games they feel they should have won. They start new quarterbacks, Tylan Green for Arkansas. He's not new for this game, but he's new to Arkansas after a solid career at Boise State. Hank Brown, of course, for Auburn. Both teams can run the ball well. And these are two of the best tailbacks in the Southeastern Conference. Jaquindon Jackson, who transferred in from Utah, leads the SEC in rushing. And we saw what Jarquez Hunter did last week. It's the second best game he's had as a rusher at Auburn, only behind the game that he had at Vanderbilt last year. So, I think we'll see Cam Brown back in the – or excuse me, Cam Coleman back in the lineup this week. I think we'll see Kay and Lee back in the lineup this week. So there's a lot of interesting storylines. And one of those is the fact that Bobby Petrino – as the offensive coordinator at Arkansas with his ties at Auburn, and certainly you look on the defensive side, Travis Williams, who has even more ties at Auburn as the defensive coordinator coming in. So it's going to be fascinating to watch.
Yeah, and we were just talking before we brought you in, Andy, I mean, about some of the other things. I mean, Hank Brown played his high school ball for Trent Dilfer, whose team just played Arkansas last week, and he told us before after you talked to him that he's in touch with Coach Dilfer just about every day. So I would imagine a little bit of info about Arkansas was gathered by Hank, and then Isaiah Rakes talked about practicing against Bobby Petrino's offense every day last year when he was at Texas A&M with DJ Durkin. So you've got DJ, you've got A&M's coordinators from last year going against each other. So they both should have a pretty good idea of what the other's tendencies or strengths are.
I asked Isaiah Rakes today, why 22 for defensive? He said, well, I was number 34 at Texas A&M, and that number was not available to me at all.
That is right.
So he settled on 22 just because it's a different kind of number for a defensive lineman.
Oh, it's distinctive.
And it looks
yeah.
different on him. 22
yeah,
looks
does.
Different on Isaiah Rakes.
It really does.
But that's the reason that he wears 22. I did not know the story until we talked about it today.
Andy, amid the first career start for Hank Brown on Saturday, I feel like a lot of the other aspects of the offense can get lost in the shuffle. Was there any one or any position group that really stood out to you and you thought had a strong game against New Mexico, a bounce-back performance?
Can you remember a game recently at Auburn where three different tight ends caught balls and two of them caught touchdown passes?
No, you're right, and unfortunately, Auburn loses another tight end in the same game. But yeah.
You lose Brandon Frazier to the broken foot. I think they hope to get him back before the end of this season. But both Mike O'Reilly and Rivaldo Fairweather had touchdown receptions, and Luke Deal had his first catch of the season. So we will likely see Rico Walker move up in the pecking order, and we'll see Jaden Muskrat move in to the tight end room, at least partially, for Auburn's jumbo packages that they'll be using. So we'll see the Auburn backup offensive guard and the tackle, apparently, move in as a tight end. He talked about that last night. Coach Freese talked about that last night on Tiger. So that's one that was a little bit different. And listen, Hank Brown threw to 10 different receivers on Saturday. I like that. I like the fact that it, you know, and threw it, you know, had the touchdown pass to Jarquez Hunter, giving you a little bit of a different look on what looked like a check down. I've heard speculation that it wasn't. That's what it looked like to me. It was a check down to Jarquez and a lot of room for Jarquez to run, getting one of his two touchdowns. I like the fact that Cam Brown continues to emerge for Auburn at the wide receiver spot. We heard so much in the offseason, and we were among those talking about it, the freeze for those freshmen. But I think Cam Brown has responded to that as well and has elevated his game. He had the first catch of the day on that first drive, and he had his first touchdown to cap off that first drive. And I like the fact that that's another big body at wide receiver that Auburn can count on. So, you know, the word is that Dylan Wade played well at right tackle. Hugh Freeze last night on Tiger Talk said he'd like to get Jeremiah Wright a couple plays off at right guard. Connor Lue, I think, had his typical ball game. He was very complimentary, not only of Tate Johnson, but Braden Joyner at that guard spot. And then Tyler Johnson and Percy Lewis continue to alternate at that left tackle spot. And I think that's the offensive line that we'll see again this week against Arkansas.
Well, interesting, Andy. I've seen a couple of reports. I didn't make it over for the short practice observation period that the media had. But reports are that looked like Tuvtal Miller was a full participant and was back with the first team today. So that's good news and great experience. We'll get to more with Andy. We've got to get to our bottom of the hour break. Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
For loving expert care for your pets, visit Moore's Milk
Drive. Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and we're on the phone with Andy. Well, we were on the phone with Andy Burcham, voice of the Auburn Tigers. We'll get him back here momentarily. This sophisticated equipment at times can be a little bit confusing. We will get him back here momentarily as we'll continue our conversation. Keep him on for another segment or so before we are before we move on this Tuesday. And then at the bottom of hour number two, don't forget Jake Crane of Crane & Company joins us then.
Mention the Tiger Talk replay.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Something. We hadn't really promoted it the other day. But yes, you know, Tiger Talk, which as we were talking with Andy, Tiger Talk last night over on Wings 94.3, we're now also re-airing that. If you missed it last night, we're going to re-air it on Thursdays following the drive here on ESPN 106.7. So that's your opportunity in case you missed any of Tiger Talk last night. Just realize if you're listening on Thursday, it's not live. If there may be something that's a day or two old.
But yeah, right after the drive on Thursdays here on ESPN 106.7, we're going to rerun Tiger Talk. So that's excited about that, and we have Andy back.
Yeah, sorry about that, Andy. We lost Andy momentarily.
At least one of those was my fault.
Yeah,
so.
Neither one was mine. But I'm on the other side.
You're on the other side
of the board today. So yeah, so it's not my fault. As I was saying, a couple of interesting things. Apparently, the media only got about 10 minutes out there today, as they did a week ago. But good news to hear that Too Tall Miller was a full go and out there running with the first unit. So it looked like at least while the media was watching, it was back to the lineup from the opening game with Percy Lewis at left tackle, Dylan Wade back at left guard, then Connor Lou, Jeremiah Wright, and Too Tall Miller. Cam Coleman was at practice, but he was wearing one of the non-contact jerseys. But the other, but it's still good to have him back at practice. And Kayan Lee was a full go at practice, so he's somebody. Kayan Lee, I'm speaking of, Andy. I think Auburn really missed last week.
No question. I think he is someone that he may be Auburn's best cover corner right now. And not having him last week probably. I don't think it didn't help Auburn in trying to play in coverage. And they'll need him. I think they need him this week against Arkansas. Arkansas really balanced offense. Oddly enough, the one thing, I mean, Tylan Green has thrown for 806 yards, but only three touchdowns in the first three games. He's also rushed for 245 yards and four more touchdowns. So Auburn gets another dual-threat quarterback, albeit this one is much bigger. Green, 6'6", and 230 pounds. So a much different-looking quarterback than Devin Dampier last week for New Mexico. Auburn needs all it can get. Auburn needs all the snaps it can get out of its secondary right now. I think that's still a bit of heartburn for the Auburn head coach with that secondary as Auburn starts Southeastern Conference play and now plays six straight games in the toughest conference in the world now until November.
Yeah, you know, Auburn had three safeties on the field quite a bit in the New Mexico game. You know, it seemed like Sylvester Smith and Bug Thompson and Caleb Wooden were out there. They went with Caleb Harris a lot as well. I mean, the different packages they were using, I think to replace Kay and Lee and to sort of absorb the loss of Kay and Lee, it speaks to how important Kay and Lee is to that defense. They have to shuffle things around when he's not there and move Keontae and Champ Anthony were the outside corners when the New Mexico game started. So
right.
I mean that's something that a healthy Kay and Lee could really matter. Although I do think that that Spooty Kite is someone who is getting more snaps. They're looking for consistency.
Yeah, absolutely.
But he's also, you know, he's provided a couple of big plays this year, including the interception.
Well, I think that the secondary is going to be a work in progress all season. I think there are going to be games where we talk about a guy like, you know, Antonio Kite or Bud Thompson. And next week it might be Sylvester Smith and Champ Anthony and Kayan Lee or J.C. Hart. Caleb Harris certainly got a lot of snaps this past week against New Mexico. I just don't get the idea that group is going to be. Listen, right now we know it's going to be Austin Keys, Eugene Asante, and Dorian Mausi as your linebackers at this point, right?
Right.
I don't get the idea that week in and week out, barring injury, we're going to see those same five guys back there at the secondary. I think it's just going to be a work in progress.
Yeah, this is quite the challenge this week, as you said. I mean, it should be a great crowd for a 2:30 game this Saturday against Arkansas. Boy, this has been a very interesting series. Auburn dominated for a while. I guess they won five or six straight before Arkansas came in and really handed it to Auburn, especially in the second half a couple of years ago in a game that was pretty much the end for Brian Harsin. And then last year, Auburn goes out to Fayetteville and ran through in Arkansas. And I heard Sam Pittman talking about, you know, last year's game, saying, you know, Peyton Thorne's legs were something that they couldn't account for last year.
Right. I would love, like, Andy's most vivid memories of last year's Arkansas game, because it was – now, I watched it on delay because I had a Troy game that exact same time. But it was shocking the way Auburn – I think it was an Arkansas team that had just won a conference game. Maybe had they just won at Florida.
They had won at Florida the week before.
They had won at Florida.
Surprised us all.
Yeah.
By winning at Florida. So all of a sudden you're like, well, maybe Arkansas has found its offense. Here's a couple things I remember about that weekend. I had a men's basketball game that Friday night. So I flew day of on one of Auburn's charters to that game on Saturday. I've never done that. It was unsettling to me not to be with the crew Friday night, but duty calls. So I had basketball Friday night, flew on Saturday to the game. Thankfully, they took me right to the gate to get in there, and I beat the crew, as a matter of fact, to the stadium.
Huh.
I was surprised at how much Auburn dominated that game a year ago. I didn't expect it to happen against an Arkansas team.
I don't think many people did at
all.
No.
Had played well the week before. But Auburn dominated, and of late, the team that wins this game has dominated the game. There haven't been a lot of close ones between Auburn and Arkansas since about 2001. I was reading that the margin of victory since 2001, there have been 17 games that have been decided by at least 14 points since 2001. And in those 17 games, the margin of victory for that team is over 20 points.
Mm-hmm.
So we've seen some blowouts of late in this series, and that's just not common, in my opinion, in Southeastern Conference play.
No, it's not.
The close ones in this, I mean, just off the top of my head, the close ones in this series, you have the one a couple of years ago where there's like a fumble overturned, right?
There was the fumble he dropped the ball and then tried to spike it.
Yeah.
And that came back to haunt Auburn against Cal. The exact same thing was called correctly in the Cal game, and it hurt Auburn.
Yes,
because it was called for intentional grounding.
There's a game with a bunch of overtimes, right, about a decade ago,
that Arkansas won there.
And and Don Dunn wins a walk off I believe that would have been a Wes Byram field goal. Wins one in Fayetteville during the late in the Tuberville era. I think there's a last second field goal, but for the most part, like, those games are memorable because so many of these games have not been compelling in the second half.
Those close games have been the exception, not the rule, at least in this series between Auburn and Arkansas since the turn of the century.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, so the other thing,
and someone has to mention Fred Talley, right? I mean, it's Arkansas, it's Auburn Arkansas week, right? I mean, we're getting further and further away from anyone understanding what that means. Like, even Darren McFadden and Peyton Hillis and Felix Jones, the 06 game, that was a shocking game for folks who remember. Auburn was maybe the number two team in the country when Arkansas comes in 06, and everyone's looking at Tim Tebow coming to town next week with the eventual national champion Florida Gators, and this Arkansas team with an offensive coordinator that had just been hired out of some high school in Arkansas, they come in and they just absolutely... they were unstoppable.
They trampled.
Unstoppable on the ground.
It was like a stampede. Yeah, you're right.
They boat raced Auburn.
Yes, 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 indeed. So, hey, what Auburn can't afford to do, Andy, this week is get off to a slow start defensively.
No, and I don't know what the answer to that is. But, I mean, Auburn the last 2 weeks against Cal and New Mexico from a defensive standpoint has gotten off to a sluggish start. Now, in both of those games, Auburn made adjustments at halftime, and it was drastically different in the second half. It gave Auburn a chance to even tie or even win that game against Cal, and it set up Auburn just dominating the second half last week against New Mexico. But you know, listen, you get off the gate slow in the SEC in an SEC game, regardless if it's a Jordan Hare are regardless if on the road, you're in some trouble. You may not be able to come back by halftime. So exactly how Auburn has to get off to a better start, that's a good question, because I'm not sure what the answer is other than it needs to happen for Auburn this Saturday, because Arkansas has the ability to put up some points. It's done that even in its loss, even in its loss at Oklahoma State. Scoring wasn't the problem.
No, not at all.
So, you got to get off to a good start against Arkansas on Saturday.
Spend a little time with the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham. Some basketball news, since the last time we talked here on the show, the announcement of the tip-off at Toomer's. And then today, see where Coach Pearl with a couple of impressive additions to the staff.
Yeah, they've added to the staff, and they've done it with development in mind, haven't they? And I'm not surprised. I mean, and I've got to think that there's guys that, you know, if they're in their development as far as their career is concerned, they'd like to be able to, you know, they'd like to be able to develop in the Bruce Pearl setting. But Reagan Sparks is someone that has been moved to a graduate assistant. Reagan was a manager,
right,
a student manager recently, and she's going to get the opportunity to work with the Tigers. And then Auburn hires Robert Allen Jr. to come in as a graduate assistant. And this is a guy that has developed players all over the Southeast for the last couple years with AAU clubs, and really has a terrific reputation. And so he'll be part of this staff. This is a really, really good coaching staff.
Yeah.
And Bruce Pearl has added to that. And in this day and age where coaches are going everywhere, this is a staff that has stayed together, which is a little bit odd in this day and age as well.
And one of the things I didn't realize, I mean, I'd heard of Robert Allen and of course his connections that he has, as well as the players that he has coached. I didn't realize he's from Selma. So that's interesting, but it really impressive additions, it appears, to Bruce's staff.
Yeah, played at Selma High School and then has ties to the late John Chaney and Temple.
Yeah.
And one of the things about John Chaney is they always practiced before class. They didn't practice after school. They practiced before school. So I would think his work ethic is if he worked with and has association with John Chaney, his work ethic will fit nicely with this Auburn staff.
I'm going to keep saying this. I'm going to manifest it. I want us downtown somewhere for a tip-off at Toomer's Day. I want us to take the show on the road that day, because that's going to be, I think, if everything goes according to plan, Thursday, October
17th.
Yeah, please,
let's have good weather this time.
Yeah. The one day we had a hurricane that year was the day tip-off at Toomer's was going to set up. But let's, Thursday, October 17th should be a really special event and a way for folks to get ready for both the men's and women's basketball seasons.
Oh, one of your sponsors is what, a half block away from Toomer's Corner?
A couple of those. We got a couple of folks pretty close to downtown.
There you go.
Well, that'll work. Andy, I didn't know if you had to get back into those fun meetings that you've been having. Like I said, I really miss some of those.
It was a Zoom meeting to talk about moving to Microsoft Teams, which
right.
is ironic, isn't it?
Yeah.
I tell you what, you can tell it's the start of SEC play. Because in addition to my normal radio hits, including the drive, I've got four others, and three of them have Arkansas ties this week. So you can tell the start of SEC, the Southeastern Conference is starting, and I've already got a couple for Oklahoma next week. So here we go.
Great.
Get ready for the SEC.
That is great. Let everybody know what all to expect, what all you've got going on, and that fans can access.
On the Talking Tigers podcast this week, Auburn assistant men's golf coach Chris Williams, the national assistant men's golf coach of the year, a guy that grew up in Moscow, Idaho, and never skied. He went south and played golf about a half hour away
from
Moscow and could play golf year-round, apparently. He tells that story. Of course, coming up this weekend, our coverage starts at 2:30. On the Auburn Sports Network. Guests include Auburn soccer coach Karen Hoppe, former Auburn defensive back, and, of course, a member of your high school radio crew at Auburn High. Rob Pate will be joining us.
Good.
Antonio Coleman joins us. And we're going to get to talk with Paul Ellett on our pregame
Great.
Show on Saturday. So we're really looking forward to that. And, of course, then we're back at Baumhauer's Victory Grill Monday night for Tiger Talk. Coach Freeze and Jessica Braswell, Auburn Equestrian Coach, will be joining us. So it's a busy, busy week, and look forward to being with the Auburn family this Saturday. Our coverage starts at 11:30 with the Tiger Tailgate Show presented by Konecka Sausage.
Yeah, the soccer season is just, I mean, Coach Hopp and her team, they are hot as a pistol right
Nothing
now.
Nothing but blanks.
And Andy, want to give you a shout out to Patton Kizzire. Getting the win this weekend after a while. Wanted to mention that with you on the line.
Yeah, his third win, I guess, in his pro career. That'll help the paycheck, that'll help the bank account, but most importantly, it helps advance him with the PGA. Mm-hmm. So and not only won, he won by 5 strokes. I mean, it wasn't close to win that. That's got to be a nice way to win by 5 strokes going to 18, right?
Yeah, be comfortable, be able to walk up very very comfortably there on to 18. That's great, Andy. It's always great stuff. Hey, give Paul my best. When you talk with him on Saturday. Really appreciate you being on with us. So we look forward to it every week.
All right, we certainly appreciate it. Have a great day, guys. War Eagle!
Andy Burcham, voice of the Auburn Tigers, with us as he is on Tuesdays. Today, had to do it by phone, but it's always great to spend a little time with Andy.
He's the best. That's so much fun.
All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. Love for you to join in here on the Tuesday Drive.
ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on this gorgeous Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio. We'd love for you to join us as well. You heard the number, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. You can text us on the Drive text box, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, 334-564-1840. We had Andy Burcham, voice of the Auburn Tigers, on with us for most of hour number one. Hope you had a chance to hear that. If you missed any or any of the drives, you can check out our podcast.
That's right. Podcast of the Drive, available however you get your podcast. Go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center. That's all presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
And hour number two of the drive brought to you, as usual, by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. We'd love to get your thoughts as we're getting ready, Auburn, about ready to jump into SEC action.
How are you feeling about Auburn, Arkansas?
I don't know.
Me too.
I think it's very much up in the air. I think both these teams feel like they've got a pretty good shot of winning the ball game this week. I mean, Auburn won handily last year, but as Andy was saying a while ago, I don't think anybody expected to see that.
Arkansas moved the football against
Arkansas
Oklahoma State.
Arkansas has moved the ball very well this year, and Auburn's defense has been slow starting. And that's a concern. Auburn does not need to let Arkansas get things going early in the ball game Saturday afternoon.
Absolutely not. No, I mean, I think this is a game where where both teams probably look at a fast start as pivotal. You know, if you can put the other team on their heels and sort of force the other team to have to. I mean, Arkansas is looking to throw the football, but still, if you put the other team on their heels, I want to see how it looks with Hank Brown against improved competition, right? Some of the I thought he had some really strong moments in his first career start. I thought he had a couple of a couple of throws he probably wanted back,
and he pointed that out today when we spent a little bit of time with him, that there were a couple of throws early on, but he said he felt a little more comfortable. Yeah. And I thought second half he was about as good as you could be in the second half. Statistically, he goes 9 for 11. The last two passes were dropped. Perry Thompson and Rico Walker dropped the last two passes he threw.
And when Auburn got the run game rolling, and it became, you know, sort of the defense had to play, they had to react to what the offense wanted to do, and Auburn could create off the play action. Like, that's That feels like where Hank Brown's going to be at his most dangerous, is when defenses have to worry about a strong Auburn running attack and Hank Brown being able to create off of that. And that's something. How does that look against Arkansas? I think Arkansas is bracing for Auburn to try to take pressure off Hank Brown with the run game, and they're gonna try to react accordingly. But I think Auburn's not. I mean, just, it's we're almost back to where we were against Alabama A&M, where you would say this is an Alabama A&M team that's gonna say, oh yeah, quarterback, prove it. Well, now we've got an Arkansas. It's a different quarterback.
Oh yep.
But I feel like it's probably gonna be an Arkansas defense that says you wanna back us off. You know, make the right reads, make accurate throws. And you can maybe punish the Arkansas defense for it. Mistakes could be really costly.
Oh, and then offensively, Bobby Petrino. I mean, Hugh Freeze talking about it yesterday, and again last night on Tiger Talk. Which, by the way, if you missed it,
hey,
you can hear Thursday right here on ESPN 106.7 immediately following the drive. But I mean, you know, Bobby Petrino. It's funny. I mean, people think of the big passing numbers, and yes, but I mean, he likes to run it, and he has a way of creating big pass plays out of run looking formations, and it's going to be a challenge, big challenge for the Auburn defense this Saturday. And all the players we were talking with today, the defensive players, saying, yeah, we know we've got to get off to a quick start, because the last 2 weeks Auburn has not. And they've been able to come back and play very well defensively. It was too little, too late. It wasn't enough, I guess, is the better way to put it, against Cal. But they really did a good job against New Mexico this past week after giving up nearly 300 yards in the first half, gave up a little over 150 in the second half. But, you cannot allow Arkansas to just run up and down the field in the first half.
Yes, consistently a super dangerous rushing attack, and then creating big plays off of that, sort of been the name of the game for Bobby Petrino,
right,
going back to, I mean, the first Louisville. Like, I mean, well, even no, you go back before that, right? I mean, you think about when he was at Auburn, but to get that Louisville job, like the Auburn team that he had in 2002 was creating, it wasn't just about Cadillac and Ronnie. It was about the ability to create explosive passing plays off of an offense that presented the threat of Cadillac and Ronnie. That gets him the Louisville job. Those Louisville offenses were consistently dangerous, running and passing. I mean, let's go through his career. Atlanta Falcons,
that one was he left in the dark of night, just sort of,
yeah,
things weren't going well,
and he thought he was going to have Michael Vick as his quarterback,
yeah,
and that didn't materialize for reasons. So then he ends up at Arkansas, a couple times.
Didn't he have three straight 10-win seasons? Arkansas?
The Arkansas team in 2011, I believe. Is that the year? Is 2011 the year that it's Bama versus LSU in the rematch?
Yeah, and Arkansas was number three.
And Arkansas only lost to those two teams in the regular season and beat everybody else pretty handily. Like Ryan Mallett, who I believe passed away, is that right?
Yes,
Ryan
he did.
Mallett,
yeah,
in the last year or two.
Yeah.
I mean, Ryan Mallett had some dangerous offenses there at Arkansas. Tyler Wilson was it? Remember the Auburn? It's 2010
here
when Mallett gets hurt
and Tyler Wilson came in and threw like crazy. That was a 50. What was the?
Oh,
63 to 40 something
madness
game. Yeah,
and that's a game. If you had, just based on that game, if you had told me Tyler Wilson was an NFL player for a, like, you'd have believed
it. I'd have believed it.
You'd
absolutely
have believed it. Yeah, I mean, so.
He looked like it that day.
Yeah, and so, and then Petrino goes back to Louisville. Things happen. Yeah, he goes back to Louisville and has at least one season, right? The Lamar Jackson Heisman year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, where they are one of the most dangerous offenses in all of college football. And so, I mean, this is a guy who has a long track record that Auburn's going to have to contend with, and this Arkansas team, that they're true to form. They're going to show heavy run, and if you overreact, if you can't stop that, or you overreact,
if you can't
to it,
stop that, he's going to keep doing it.
Yes,
and beat your head, beat your brains in.
Yes,
but I mean, no, he only had 10 and 11 win seasons back to back.
Inherited a program that was in total disarray.
5, 8, 10, and 11 in his 4 years.
The five includes a win at Auburn in 08, I believe, where where that's sort of the straw that breaks the camel's back for the Tuberville era that season, because that was an Arkansas team that had really struggled early in the season, and Petrino comes into Auburn with a team that seemed pretty overmatched and gets the win that day, and I remember that one. Like that was a tough loss, and it felt like a season definer. So yeah, Petrino's he's made it happen before, and this is it's a real challenge for DJ Durkin and the Auburn defense to try to solve what this Arkansas offense can do.
So do you feel like I don't know if you were on when we were talking about this yesterday, Brian and I. Do you feel like it's overstating that this is? I mean, you've talked in the preseason how important this ball game is. It's even more important now that you've lost to Cal.
Mm-hmm.
You lose this one to go 2-2, and the competition level is going to step up next week, and then the week after, and then you're on the road for the remainder of the month. You lose this ball game. If Auburn loses this ball game, you could lose five straight.
Mm-hmm. And with the loss to Cal a week ago. As well, you could have a five.
Yes, that's what I mean. You could be 2-6.
Yes, yes.
If you lose this ball game,
you absolutely could. I mean, I think that this feels like your most winnable of the next.
If you win this one, it doesn't mean you're going to win the rest. But I mean, you feel better and you're building. You're getting there. You lose this one, it's tough. Mm-hmm. It's really, really tough to But I mean,
we did hours.
Who knows what from week to week?
Hours and hours and hours of programming in the off season, Bill, and we didn't really talk about. Well, what's it going to look like for Auburn if they lose to Cal and Arkansas?
Yeah.
Didn't talk about that very much.
No,
you know,
we didn't.
You know why? Because it was, I mean, one, it didn't seem, yeah, I mean, it seemed less likely than some of the other outcomes.
Well, you felt like you beat Cal last year and you're so much better this year.
I think it's, how about this? Because you know the situation if Auburn loses to Cal and Arkansas with this schedule, and it's not good.
It's not pretty, no.
It's a turbulent flight. And so this feels like a huge game for Auburn and the Cal game
close to a must win as you can get.
And the Cal game magnified that. I mean, the Cal game made it to where any room for error you had to lose one of the two between Cal and Arkansas before Oklahoma came to town, well, you used it. Like, you know, if you
win this one. Look, I mean, how's Oklahoma coming out of this weekend hosting Tennessee.
No, okay, two winnable home games coming up. Like, I would say that's true of Auburn. Like both of these games are, I mean, is it 3.5? And the numbers dropped to 3,
yeah,
I think,
three,
in some places. By the way, Oklahoma, a slight favorite at home against Tennessee, which some people are a little surprised by. But Oklahoma playing in Norman on Saturday night.
I don't know what to expect. Oklahoma has not been as impressive as I thought, but it is at home. It's at Norman.
That game feels can't miss, right? Like Tennessee-Oklahoma feels, I mean, first ever SEC game for Oklahoma, mm-hmm. and it's this Tennessee team.
Josh Heupel going back to his alma mater.
They could have scored 200.
They could have scored. They easily score 100.
They could easily.
It's 65 at the half.
Onside kick.
65 at up 30.
Onside kick up 30 just because they're not going to see it coming. Oh, but in like the first quarter, right? It was like whatever it was.
It was first quarter because they scored 37 in the first quarter. 37 in the first quarter.
This Tennessee. I mean, and again, you don't want to blow that out of proportion.
Yeah, I mean, Auburn, I don't know.
I mean, Auburn.
I don't know how impressive their win against NC State is. I mean, I just don't. I mean, they've been ridiculously impressive, but I wouldn't be shocked if Oklahoma beats them. But then on the other hand, I won't be surprised if Tennessee stomps them.
Yeah, I'm curious to see. I think with the Tennessee offense, it's another one where it's been, although NC State. Folks would have told you that that's a credible challenge for an SEC team with postseason aspirations. But no, I want to see what it looks like taking Nico on the road, true road game against a coach like Venables and a program like Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Like that is a, I mean, we've got some. Again, we knew that was going to happen with the addition of Texas and Oklahoma and the dissolution of the divisions and something. Like we've got some amazing conference games coming up, and I think Tennessee, Oklahoma. Even though it's not necessarily two top 10 teams, it's not Bama, Georgia a week later or anything like that. It is a huge game and a game you're not going to want to miss.
No, absolutely not. We'd love to hear from you, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. A little note, if you are looking for tickets, if you don't have tickets for the Arkansas game, got a couple. that you can call in, and we'll see if we can get you set up with those two tickets. These are tickets on the west side in Section 1. So you can check in if you'd like. Did we have a call?
We lost him. I think we got Crawford on the line.
We lost him. Oh. I tell you what, Crawdad, hang on. We will get to our first break. Give us a call back, and we'll get you up first here in hour number two of the Tuesday Drive.
Dixie Electric Plumbing and Air rallies for you. No matter the problem, Dixie will tackle it. Our licensed
ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. And Crawford was just calling in, and he had probably just, noticed somewhere that the line actually – I was a little surprised when you said that about Oklahoma, because I had heard that Tennessee was about a 5 or 6 point favorite.
Yeah, I must have looked at a Vegas Insider says that the line opened at Oklahoma -3.5, but pretty much everywhere now has Oklahoma as a 7 point favorite. I don't know if anybody actually listed.
You mean Tennessee?
Well, no. Okay, so Vegas Insider says Oklahoma started as a 3.5 point favorite, and now list pretty much everywhere Tennessee is a seven point favorite. I don't know if it was ever listed anywhere with that Oklahoma line, or if that was just online speculation or something like that. But yeah, pretty much everywhere now, it's Tennessee by about a touchdown. The Auburn Arkansas line is
that one was like 3 last time.
Yeah, three's the number you can get pretty much everywhere. Auburn and what's the other? Oh, you got a USC Michigan going on at the same time too. You got a couple interesting games there in the 2:30 window. I don't know how interesting UCLA LSU is going to be.
How about Florida Mississippi State?
How about Florida Mississippi State at 11 a.m.? Yeah.
It's at Starkville. If Mississippi State wins, is Billy Napier? I mean, there was a lot of buzz this past weekend that the board of directors at the University of Florida was calling an executive meeting, and that they were going to let Billy Napier go right then. You lose to Mississippi State on the road. Who've they got up next?
Well, they have a bye week, and then UCF comes to town.
Well, see, that might be the time to make a change then. If you lose to Mississippi State, you can make a change.
After UCF, there's 6 straight home games or 6 straight conference games for Florida. Not 6 straight home games, but you've got after UCF, it's
Tennessee, Kentucky, Georgia, at Texas, LSU, Ole Miss, and then at Florida State. Yeah. There's a lot of losses coming.
I wonder if there's even a. I mean, if you fire him now or after the Ole Miss game.
Well, if you lose the Mississippi State game to go 1-3, you're going to beat anybody in the next 6 games?
Well, here's my thing. Are you going to hire a new coach before Florida State? Like, if you're Florida, are you hiring the new head coach before the Florida State game?
Not unless the interim coach has done an unbelievable job.
Yeah, so I would wonder what
let
kind
him,
of
app- let him coach it out and go 2-10.
I wonder if what kind of appetite there is to fire him before LSU or Ole Miss at the end of the season. You know what I mean? Like let him wear the win loss record.
If they don't beat Mississippi State, will they win another ball game?
They won't be favored. They might be favored at home against Kentucky.
Maybe.
But letting him coach another home game or two would be just
brutal.
Just rough. It'd be rough. I wonder what kind of attendance you'd be looking at. I wonder what kind of attitude you'd be looking at from the folks who attend.
Yeah.
You've been at the swap. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how often you've been there when things are going poorly because things aren't.
I'm afraid, like baby gators being thrown.
Yeah,
it'd
be bad. It'd be bad. Eggs. eggs or baby gators or something. You're right. No, I do wonder. Oh. But I mean, I would think that. I mean, if you and maybe there's an interim candidate they want to evaluate. Although I have to imagine there's no appetite to stay like among Florida fans.
No,
there's no appetite to stay within the program, and it's got to be an outsider. But yeah, I think and then you got Ole Miss.
All Florida fans would be doing is pulling the hoping that when they go to Oxford, they bring Lane back with them.
Interesting that Ole Miss is the last game conference
game,
the conference slate. Yeah. I do. Are you getting?
I could see Lane at Florida, couldn't you?
Yeah, but are you getting further?
His daughter's not going to keep him from going this time.
Yeah, but are you getting far enough away from? I mean, it's because some of the other things that are in disarray, like I do get the argument that the landscape of college football has changed a lot.
Yeah, but can Ole Miss continue to compete talent-wise with what Florida can do?
If their NIL operation is a lot more sophisticated than Florida's, maybe they can, because that seems to matter more than just about anything else these days.
Yeah, I mean, ask Hunter Yurcich. I mean, we'll get into that a little bit, too. But
well, you know what? Ask Billy Napier.
Yeah. But Florida, I mean, there are plenty of Bull Gators. All they've got to do is do what Tennessee's doing. Tennessee today announcing they're adding a 10% talent fee to season tickets starting next year. I did some quick math. All right, Auburn season tickets were $475 this year. If Tennessee's are in the neighborhood, let's just round it to $500. 10% on top of that, that's $50 per season ticket. Tennessee, 105,000 seats. Say 10,000 for the visitors, 15,000 for students. That leaves you 80,000 season tickets you can sell at $50 a pop. Do the math. That's $4 million for NIL right there.
Well, a couple of numbers from Chris Lowe's ESPN.com story about this. $135 million in revenue for the Tennessee football program in 2023. Now, revenue is not season tickets.
No, it's not.
But let's assume at a healthy – I mean –
And I heard some people going, oh, Tennessee's having to do this. No, Tennessee's doing it because they can do it. It's not like they have to. But if there is a way you can get an easy $4 or $5 million more – they're going to do it.
$75 million profit for the Tennessee Athletic Department or the Tennessee football program in 2023. 15 straight sellouts at Neyland. Led the SEC in home attendance in 2023 with 713,405 fans. They averaged 101,915 a game.
Yeah.
At Neyland, they have sold all 70,500 of their season tickets.
So only 70,000. That's only $3.5 million. If the season ticket's about $500.
Danny White says there is a current 15,000 deep waiting list for season tickets at Tennessee.
So there goes your, oh, but they're all going to stop buying tickets if it goes up. If it goes up $50, no, they're not. Especially when they're winning and expecting to win like Tennessee is right now.
Cheapest season ticket for Tennessee home football, which includes tickets. In 2025, the cheapest season ticket for home football at Tennessee, including taxes, the required contribution, and talent fee, will cost $453.75
in the family
section, which is the upper deck.
So I'm sure the average is over $500.
Student ticket prices will increase to $25.
Oh, I'm not even including student tickets.
I think this is
really pretty simple math. That's an easy way to add. You know, $3 to $5 million to your NIL funds.
Well, and we were reading some of Hunter Yurcich's comments, which is worth that's worth checking out if you can find them, where he was talking to the.
I don't know that he said anything that is untrue, but it's the kind of thing that people go, are you crazy?
Well, and
when he says all it's going to take,
yeah, he suggests that for Arkansas's football NIL operation to get to where other SEC
to the top to the contenders,
the top tier, he suggests that it would take 10,000 Arkansas fans paying about $1,200 a year each, more than is currently being contributed, and I would think that raising ticket prices so that at least people are getting something. In return for that money,
that's the way it's going to be done everywhere when schools can directly pay, and that sort of gets into the news today from Georgia, where Governor Brian Kemp today signed an executive order, which read, "I'll read you the executive order that Brian Kemp, Georgia governor, signed today. Whereas." Student athletes in the state of Georgia should compete on a level playing field and not forego compensation available to student athletes in other states while a settlement is pending. Therefore, by the power vested in me as governor of the state of Georgia, it is hereby ordered that neither the NCAA, an athletic conference, nor any other organization with authority over intercollegiate athletics shall take any adverse action against a post-secondary educational institution in the state of Georgia for such institution facilitating compensation, offering compensation, or compensating an intercollegiate student athlete for the use of student athletes NIL, provided that no post-secondary educational institution shall use funds allocated by the state of Georgia. So that basically is he signed an executive order saying schools in the state of Georgia can directly pay their players.
Well, it feels like not all that long ago when we would wonder, well, if you pass a law like this, would it jeopardize the state's
standing? Would it
jeopardize schools in that state and NCAA member institutions in that state? Would they be limited from the postseason or from competing at all? Because there were, but we've seen California and Texas and Tennessee and other places pass these rules, and it doesn't seem like those schools are being banned from the postseason in any sport. So I could see why the governor of the state that has the number one team in the country in it.
Well, they number one till this past week. Till this week.
Oh, that's who
Texas moved to one.
I still would have probably.
Team that's won two of the last three national championships.
Yeah,
and is in the top two.
Yeah, I mean, I would have still. You know what I mean? Like, I'd think that it's not all that shocking that those kind of laws are being played. And again, it's you know, sort of a balls in your court move for the NCAA. Do you want to try to take action on this, or do you want to continue changing the rules in response to these laws being passed at different states?
334-321-1390. That is the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. We're going to check in with Jake Crane from Crane & Company, get his thoughts on last week's games, this week's games, and whatever else we can get into with Jake on the other side. So stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive. Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Drew getting the afternoon off, so Dan is at the controls as we head to the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. Welcome in our good friend from Crane & Company, Jake Crane. Jake, how you doing, man?
Doing great, man. How are y'all?
Doing fine. Hey, much better than a week ago. The sun has come out this week. The Hank Brown's debut as a starter went pretty darn well, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, he did everything that, you know, he needed to do. My main thing, I was looking at the decision-making, and you got to give credit to the offensive line. He had a clean pocket the whole night, but I thought he went where he needed to go with the ball. He wasn't afraid to take shots, and he looked poised. Now, again, New Mexico is below average defensively. Mm-hmm. We're going to find out a lot more this week, but if you wanted to build confidence, if you're Hank Brown – and the offensive staff around him and the players, I think he did pretty much that. So, you know, going into this game, the windows are going to be tighter to fit the ball into. Pass rush is going to be a little bit more violent. There's going to be more guys in your face, which is going to speed up the game. But we'll see how he handles it. He's 1-0.
Thought one thing Auburn did to try to settle Hank Brown's stomach was really make sure the running backs were involved, something that wasn't necessarily the case in the loss to Cal. Jarquez and Damari both had some really strong moments Saturday against New Mexico.
Yeah, they did. I mean, they're both good backs. My only thing with, you know, Jarquez, he just fumbles, it feels like, once a game, and typically it's in a big moment. He's got to get out of that habit, which, you know, he's good enough, too. When he does hold on to the ball, he's a hard guy to tackle. He runs kind of knees to face mask. But no, the offensive line was good. I thought the RPO game was good. And, yeah, look, the quarterback's best friend is a run game, right? It protects him not only from having to sit back there, but it kind of slows down the defensive line and keeps you balanced offensively and on schedule. I thought Auburn did a good job of avoiding the third and long, the predictable downs, and then not penalizing themselves early with false starts and things like that. So, yeah, a strong run game. Mixed with being able to pull the RPO and make the routine throws routine, that's going to lead to scoring drive.
Yeah, and speaking of the offensive line, it looks like Tutal Miller is back. He was out at practice today with no limitations, so that'll help the offensive line a little bit more as they get ready for Arkansas. And one of the things we were talking about all last week, Jake, was if you're going to make the move to Hank Brown, it needed to be before you get into conference play. He needed to get out there and have that experience. And granted, New Mexico's, they're not a stalwart by any means defensively, but just getting those first game jitters. And I thought in the second half, I mean, he really looked cool and poised and comfortable.
Yeah, well, and you know, it's not just the on-the-field stuff that you're trying to get out of the way. It's that week of you know, I know they didn't know until Thursday, but those couple days before, it's going through the practice prep as the guy. It's going through Tiger Walk, pregame warm-ups, you know, getting all of those kind of first start at this level at a place like Auburn out of the way. And yeah, Arkansas is a better opponent. It's a conference game. It's a bigger game. But you got through the process of doing it. And, you know, it's almost like going to college, right? Like you a lot of times for younger guys, the hardest part is just getting used to the routine and understanding what goes into it. So, yeah, all in all, you got through that experience. You had success. It's going to make you hungry for more, and now you know what to expect.
Talen Green, Arkansas quarterback, joined them from Boise in the portal in the offseason. Had a sharp game against Oklahoma State, although it trailed off at the end. Seemed to really struggle against UAB. What can you tell us about the Arkansas offense that Auburn's going to see on Saturday?
Well, you know, that was the question when they brought in Talen Green. You knew Bobby Petrino was going to have a good plan, especially for a guy that can run like that at his size, being able to eat up yards the way that he does. The question was, can he be a consistent thrower? You know, nobody's asking him to be Drew Brees or Dan Marino. And when you have that skill set, you know, you tend to put defenses in conflict and guys tend to get more open more often. But you still got to make throws, right? Can you make those throws in the windows consistently to be a threat with your arm, which does nothing but illuminate your run game even more and make you more of a threat? And so far, it's been inconsistent, right? A little bit about kind of like what we saw at Boise State. I thought against Oklahoma State, he threw it about as well as he's going to throw it. And then against UAB, you know, he was overthrowing crossers. He wasn't on time. And when he misses up, right? It's like a pitcher in baseball that throws really hard. When they miss a lot, they miss up. And when you miss up in this game, that ball tends to go into the safety's hands. So yep. If you're Auburn, you obviously want to turn him into a thrower. But a big thing against a guy like this, if you watch him, he wants to run around everything, right? He doesn't escape up through the pocket a lot. He outruns guys to the edges. And I think y'all will agree with me, this is not the most athletically gifted defense that Auburn has had. So as bad as the angles were last week against Dampier, you cannot let this guy get around the corner. You cannot let him break contain. And when he does, you got to find a way to make him cut the ball back because he's a little loosey-goosey with the ball, especially when he moves. So if you're Auburn, there's a fine line in between trying to keep him in the pocket and not rush past him, which in essence makes you lose contain. It's a hard thing to do, but you got to make this guy go north and south. You cannot let him get to that edge because he doesn't slow down. He picks up speed. He's a long strider. And that's going to be a tough task for this Auburn defense.
And something else that they can't do is they can't get off to a slow start like they had the last couple of weeks defensively.
Yeah, I mean, Bill, it's – and they've made great halftime adjustments. DJ Durkin has had a good plan, I will say, and I think they're going to get out of it. You can't go three down linemen and not cover anybody.
No.
Like, you can't do that. You can't live that way.
Well, you can and not expect to win, though.
Yeah, and expect to win. And I know you're trying to get your best guys on the field, but I expect to see a lot more four down in this game. You got to set the tone early, and if you do that, I think this is a guy that'll put the ball in harm's way. Not only that, I think you can get some intentional grounding, right? I think he can try and you know, kind of like Castellanos from Boston College a little bit. Sometimes when he improvises, that's when he gets in trouble. So, if you're Auburn, it's going to be a very, very disciplined rush against this guy, and you cannot get off to a slow start because he's a rhythm shooter for sure.
Couple of really interesting games. Obviously, the marquee game in the league is the Tennessee-Oklahoma game out in Norman. I mean, Tennessee could have scored 100 points. I mean, they could have scored 100 points easily this past week. And Josh Heupel going back to his alma mater, to a place where I don't think he left with great feelings toward his alma mater when he was sort of canned as offensive coordinator. Oklahoma has, I mean, they played okay, but
a little pun there.
I didn't even mean that one. They have, but I mean, it hasn't been
the great ones ever do.
It hasn't been great. They just come naturally. That's right. But yeah, what are you thinking about this one? Tennessee, a solid touchdown favorite.
Well, I understand the people that are like, oh, well, you know, Tennessee's schedule hadn't been that great. NC State turns out isn't that good. They made a quarterback change this week after having to come back to beat La Tech. I just keep watching Tennessee, and I understand the schedule can be weak, but my eyes don't lie to me. Like, what are they bad at?
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. What is Tennessee bad at? Like, where are they weak at? Nico's first road start? Well, he looks pretty calm and poised to me in the pocket, and it's not like he hasn't played any. He's been in that system going now on a year and a half, almost 2 years. Oklahoma had to replace their quarterback and offensive line. That's going to take time. And Jackson Arnold's going to be a really good player. If you haven't watched this kid out of Oklahoma, he's going to be really, really good. But I think this Tennessee team's too much. And it's hard for a guy like Venables, a defensive guy, to disguise anything when you go as fast as Tennessee does. A lot of people think that Tennessee goes fast just to make you tired. That's not the main reason they do it. That's a great side effect of it. But they do it so you don't have time to disguise anything. You have to basically line up in base. And then if you're going to blitz, you got to show it. And it makes the math easier for Nico to do it. So I think that there's a narrow path to victory for Oklahoma. Tennessee would have to fall apart, but I just don't see it, man. I tell you, if they go handle business this weekend, we got to really start talking about Tennessee doing some big things this year with this team.
I think a Tennessee vote in the top five, you know, especially if they win on Saturday, is totally legitimate. Like I think that's the, you know, they look.
I mean, I agree.
They look.
I agree.
Look the part.
I mean, again, Dan. I mean, what are they not good at?
They look the part. And if Tennessee Oklahoma is filet mignon,
oh man, then
we've got a game in Starkville that's like a hot dog somebody
but
dropped.
But I can't help. I want to watch it because it's a train wreck. I mean, Mississippi State just dominated last week by Toledo in Florida. Golly, we were talking about this a little while ago, Jake. If the Gators lose in Starkville, will they win again? I don't know that they will.
Saying, at this point, I mean, it's not good. I think if they lose to Mississippi State, they got to fire him after the game. Like you,
they got an open
date. I don't think you can sit here and just keep waiting. But I've named this game.
I'm not sure, Jake. I'm not sure he gets a post game press conference. If they lose to Mississippi State.
Oh, no, no, they may fire him during the third quarter.
I'm not sure.
Kidding,
yeah,
but
you don't even get a farewell address.
Yeah, no. It's and look, if you fire me for $28 million, please fire me into the sun
every day.
But no, I'm calling this game the patience versus the patient, right? One with a CE, one with a TS. Because if you're Mississippi State, I'm telling you, Levy's the right guy. It's just going to take time. That roster's really bad. Now that doesn't excuse getting, you know, drowned in a small puddle of water by Toledo. Ooh. But eventually they're going to figure it out. At Florida right now, I mean, it's just the asylum's out. I mean, it's crazy. So it's, look, it's football. And it's like, you know, seeing the train wreck, you got to look at it. You're not going to not look at it when you drive by it. So you might as well.
And the ice doesn't really solidify under Napier if he wins this game. Because he gets to keep, he probably keeps his job.
No.
But he gets a bye week, and then he faces UCF in the swamp in a situation where I imagine the crowd will be incredibly impatient. I think it's the nicest way to describe it, and that's a game he probably has to win to keep his job. I think even if you beat Mississippi State, although Jake, I also wonder. I speculated on this earlier. Would there be a desire to keep Napier and maybe make him wear some of these losses before you make a change? I don't know, after LSU or Ole Miss or some game late.
How ugly would you want it if a game was televised to either see empty stands or just, you know, just nothing but hostility home game?
I don't know enough about the coaching staff to wonder if there's somebody, you know, popular they could promote or something, but
they want's going to take this job week seven. Like, no. They're going to go get somebody who's doing well, so it's going to be an interim guy. Like I don't think that's my thing. Is
Urban's
like,
waiting by the phone, Jake? Urban would do it.
Not in
two. No, Urban's waiting on Notre Dame. When you look at this situation, what I find fascinating now with the transfer portal is it better to just rip the Band-Aid off and let the recruiting class go ahead and die and let your roster just get ravaged? Or do you hold on for as long as possible and hope you have a situation like Bill O'Brien at Boston College, where you hire a big name and all of a sudden nobody wants to leave, right? That's worth it. That's not told basically in, you know, other terms. You probably need to go because you ain't playing here. So I don't know. It's a new era, man. Like, again, I'm just to the point now where it's not a great situation to be in, but you lose to Mississippi State, man. I don't know how you survive another week.
What do you make of the it feels like the Lane Kiffin stuff is already starting with Florida.
Well, like, look, Florida's a better job per se than Ole Miss. But if you're Lane, like, why? Why would I want those problems? You got NIL at Ole Miss. You're a hero at Ole Miss for what you're doing. And Lane's already had the big-time jobs. He was like 11 years old as the Raiders coach. Then he was at Tennessee. Then he was at USC. Like, sometimes, it's like Goldilocks, man. Like, sometimes the porridge is a little bit too hot. He was an assistant. That porridge is a little too cold. Now with Ole Miss, the porridge seems like it's just right. I mean, he can do no wrong.
You know who he reminds me of in a lot of ways, where it feels like people link him to the job just because they can't get past the lack of success historically at the program, is Bruce Pearl. Like, he's had that sort of impact on Ole Miss football, and people look at Kentucky or they look at UConn and they think, well, if they wanted Bruce Pearl, they could go get him, and yet Bruce Pearl's still at Auburn.
I hadn't thought about that.
Lane Kiffin every offseason. They say, well, these programs that have been more historically successful than Ole Miss could go get Lane Kiffin. And yet here he is with a team that could make a lot of noise this season.
Yeah, it's a good comparison, I think. You can win, and I know Lane wants to win.
And they both coached at Tennessee. I didn't even think about that.
They were... But if you win eight, nine games a year, and every now and then win 11 or 12 and make a run, you're going to be the most famous coach in Ole Miss history. I mean, they're going to be building statues out of beer pong cups.
Jake, I got a name for you that isn't Lane Kiffin at Florida that I think
say Kurt Cignetti.
A bad one either. I think and Florida people would probably freak out because you probably want someone who's. I mean, I think Drinkwitz.
Everybody
could be
wants a name.
Well, I think Drinkwitz could be a Plan B. But then there's with the offense he's got going there at Missouri. Yeah. You know, folks might say
personality for it.
I think so too. If FAU was really good. Could Tom Herman make that jump, or is that still probably
no chance.
Yeah,
there's
I know.
No
it's probably not at Florida. It's, I think he needs to
happening.
Tom Herman's probably going to have to win at a smaller level major conference school before he gets like another superpower job. But I've watched a little FAU this year. He's still Tom Herman, and he still knows what he's doing with an offense.
Tom, how about this? How about a name that nobody else was talking about who's up there balling at Syracuse right now? What about Fran Brown?
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
people keep thinking Fran Brown's. Yeah. People keep thinking he's going to come to an SEC school.
I mean, he's an SEC guy. I mean, he's groomed at Georgia. Like, this cat's coming back. It's just a matter of time. But if you're Florida, this I was talking about yesterday. Like, Florida, you don't need to limit your parameters to, oh, no, we're so scared about what happened with Billy Napier. We're never going to hire a coach from the group of five again or whatever. You need somebody that's a little bit arrogant. Think about it. Mm-hmm. Who are the only coaches that have won at Florida? Like, big. Spurrier, Urban Meyer, Mullen, those are not quietly confident guys. There's a certain type of person that I think has better success. That's what I'm telling you. Kurt Cignetti went on the basketball court at Indiana when he took the job and said Purdue's terrible. Ohio State and Michigan both suck too. Florida needs that type of guy.
Yeah, that's why I said Eli's personality.
I mean, Drink would fit right in there with that sort of attitude.
He would.
I hate the Sun Belt thing because I feel like G.J. Kinney is just waiting for a job like that to start pouring gasoline on things. But maybe it's a really big jump.
They won't jump. Do it after. This hire.
No. What about
they just won't.
What about Chadwell?
I think that would be a great hire, but I don't think they're going to do it. Yeah. I don't think they're going to hire a guy from a quote-unquote group of five. Jamie Chadwell is an incredible coach. But I just don't think it's you know, you get burned on it once. I don't think you go back to the well. Not that it's right. I don't think it's right. I think you go get the right guy. You don't necessarily do it from, you know, oh, well, we're never – because there's been group of five guys that have had a ton of success, and there's been power five guys that have gone down in flames.
Yeah, but when you touch it and you got that blister and the blister's still there, you don't want to reach back. So
that's why they won't. Touch the oven twice.
Yep. Jake, great stuff as always. We're completely out of time. Let everybody know what you got coming up on Crane & Company.
Man, look, we dove into Auburn, Arkansas today, had a full preview if you want to check that out. We're talking about it all week, that and everything else going on in college football and a little bit of the NFL. Let's go to YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. It's Crane & Company, C-R-A-I-N, and come in there and hang out with us.
Sounds good, Jake. Thanks a lot, man. Have a great
week. Guys.
Awesome stuff, Jake. Talk to you again soon.
Hey, Dan. See you, buddy.
All right, we need to get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us as we wind it down here on the Tuesday Drive.
Experience and knowledge from the pros.
More of The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Final segment of the Tuesday Drive. Our thanks to Jake Crane joining us this hour from Crane & Company, and of course, voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, with us in hour number one. Fun show today as we spend a little time looking back, more time looking ahead toward this weekend.
Remind me, maybe Friday, we got to call our old buddy Ty Richardson
over
Hit That Line. I think he's coming to
when
town.
Andy was talking about all the Arkansas hits that he's doing this week.
Yeah, the Hit That Line guys in Fort Smith and the Arkansas area, they're doing a great job. There's a lot of killer Arkansas media. They do a great job covering their program.
And it's always fun out there. Yeah, it's always fun to get their take because they always seem surprised that Auburn's competitive.
You know what though? Those dudes love making the Auburn trip though. You got to hang out with some of them a couple years ago, and it's been a good time.
All right, we're out of time here on the Tuesday Drive. Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover in the studio tomorrow to open the show, and then we have Tiger Takes starting on Wednesdays tomorrow with Eugene Asante. So that'll be tomorrow. We're out of time here on the Tuesday Drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.